So, Justin and Carrie, thank you for being our first guest in our summer series. We're part of the family. I'll say to both of you, when we started our series of having to do live stream services and classes, the very first day we did it, our theme was all circumstances faith. But man, I did not have any idea what all kind of circumstances we'd be talking about.
Sure.
And I want for us to kind of think about how we're a part of each other's lives in circumstances that none of us could have anticipated or having any control over. And you know, you two have something in common with several of our families here, in that you have been having to, all of you, work from home and also educate from home and do church from home and shop from home and everything else. And then you have something in common with a few of our families in that you've been thinking about transitioning from one job to another one in the middle of all of this, which involves, in your case, a move. And then you have one circumstance in your life, absolutely unique. Nobody else at Watermill has this circumstance, and that is you're in the process of coming here to work with us. So I appreciate the chance to ask. So let me ask you to start with, both of you, tell us about the work that you have been doing for these last 11 and 12 years. In other words, what work have you had to do? What job have you had to do while we've been in this situation? Justin?
Yeah, first I was going to say, I thought you were going to say the unique position that we have that no one else has is being incredibly good looking, but you know, I guess yours was good too.
Yeah.
So the question was, what have we been doing over the last, you know, 12 years? So, you know, we've been here in Abilene for 11 years, and Carrie can tell you what she's been doing, but I've been working with the Hillcrest Church of Christ as our campus minister, working with college students. So in a way, it's kind of very similar to working with a youth group, in that, you know, we're focused on young adults, and we have a big volunteer system. I've been teaching some at campus, but over the past 5 or 6 years, in addition to working with campus ministry, I've started taking on a larger role at Hillcrest with leadership development, working with the elders on structure and organization, as well as introducing the idea of spiritual practice and spiritual discipline to our leadership team, and thinking about growing together as a community spiritually. So we've been doing a lot of that, and then most recently I've worked with the elders to sort of redefine how we are going to view and structure deacons. You know, we kind of determined at the outset that most of what we know about deacons is that we ought to have them, as far as scripture goes, and not much about how they ought to be organized. And so we've worked to think about that. So I've kind of picked up a lot of that sort of stuff, in addition to working with our college students. And working with college students is a busy enough job as it is, with, you know, retreats and mission trips and teaching classes and organizing and leading life groups and so on. And then I've also done some premarital counseling and various things like that. So we've been pretty busy. You know, started off with a little more narrow of a focus, but as the years have gone on, it's kind of turned in more into a very eclectic sort of ministry focus.
Carrie, what about you and your job there?
We moved to Abilene for my job at Abilene Christian University, and Justin was hired at Hillcrest a year after we moved here. And I am a tenured associate professor of theater, specializing in the main part of my job has been the private voice lessons for the musical theater majors, and I've kind of been in charge of all the vocal training that they get and the vocal direction for a lot of productions. But I also have gotten to teach theater history, which is one of my favorite courses to teach, and voice and diction, which is a really fun course to teach dialects and phonetics and things like that. I also have directed quite a few productions here, acted as both the director and the vocal director. And the biggest part of the job has been mentoring students, because while we're at a Christian university, more and more, but it doesn't really matter what university you're at, more and more students are not coming from a church or faith background at all. And the ones who do are struggling with their faith quite a bit. So Justin and I have done a lot of mentoring together and things like that. I also, on the side, have worked with children's books and made wedding cakes and things like that. So I'm really looking forward to being able to spend more time being a mom and being home. I am going to be teaching the capstone arts and culture class to our graduating seniors in August online. Since this year was such a different year, I was able to still do that, which I'm happy about. It's been really difficult to say goodbye to everybody, but I'm looking forward to a break. And you know, it's a pretty strenuous program. It's a BFA program instead of just a bachelor's degree. So these are really serious students who go to New York, and I've done a lot of their showcases with them in New York, and go to LA. I've had some students on network television and films and things like that. So it's neat to see where they go and what they do, especially the ones who we feel like focused on their spirituality while they were here. Seeing how they're affecting other people now has been really neat for us. So
how have you handled the situation where you've tried to do those kind of jobs from home while this has been going on? A lot of our people here have had to try to work from home, and not always with jobs that really are really fit that. And you both have jobs that, I mean, you can contact people, but in terms of doing those jobs, have you still been trying to do that from home, and other than just to say online, what's been involved in it?
Yeah, I'll go first. It's been probably a little simpler for me than it has for Carrie, since she had to continue teaching voice lessons. It's online, it's difficult to do something like that. The class that I taught at ACU was pretty simple to do. In terms of Hillcrest, it's, you know, as you well know, it's really difficult trying to maintain. You know, I can do classes, and I have been. I do a Wednesday night live stream in class and a Sunday morning class, and but that's not the bread and butter of ministry. It's interacting with people and being there for people. And so while I've been doing those, it's been a challenge to try to figure out how to maintain, you know, the sort of meat of ministry, which is, you know, the people part. And so, you know, the best I've tried to do is, and in some ways it's ended up being a little better, as I've tried to make contact with my students every day. And so I had our roster, and I was trying to contact at least 4 or 5 students a day, ask them how they were doing, pray with them over the phone, try to have a conversation. And it turns out, you know, I think I worked more at the relational side of things throughout this than I did before, because before you'd rely on class and seeing them on campus and things like that. Without it, I've had to be way more intentional about interacting with them. And so, you know, that's what I've tried to do, is just spend more time talking with them on the phone individually and connecting with them, and as well as producing classes that they can view online and interact with in that way. So it's definitely been challenging trying to maintain the personal part of things rather than just putting something out for them to watch and that be the end of it.
Yeah, I think that's that's the challenge we've had, Justin, in figuring out how to do the online stuff and then also to build, to nourish the personal things as we've gone along. So Carrie, what about the work at the university? Have you guys carried on classes online too, or?
Yes, and some of those are easier than others. I did have one class that was more academic that I was able to mainly just say, we use Canvas, and so I was mainly able to just upload the rest of the semester to Canvas and check their work as they turned it in. But the voice lessons, I teach 18 students for 30 minutes a week, each week. And one, we had already moved my piano up there at spring break, and then all of this hit, so I didn't have a piano at the house anymore. And two, teaching people Broadway belting while the kids are trying to do their schoolwork and Justin's trying to teach his classes out on the back porch is didn't work very well. So I still went up to my office because that's where I normally would teach with my piano and everything, and just my office is right next to the outside door to the building. So it was kind of eerie because I was always up there by myself, and I would just try to lump them all together so I didn't have to take any breaks and walk through the rest of the building. But the humorous part of that was, when students forgot to warn their parents that they were going to be working on belting in their room, I had a few terrified parents running in and barging in during lessons going, "Are you okay?" And so that part was hard. And the other part of it is, a lot of times their voice lessons turn into not therapy sessions, but singing is a very vulnerable thing. And when we're in person, it's easier for me to gauge when they're having an off day or they're struggling internally with something. And so it was way more exhausting teaching that online because I was constantly having to try to figure out if I was connecting with them, especially when they were having a hard time. And so that part was way more challenging. The other, the actual teaching of the singing part, I was able to figure out with a lot of other voice teacher friends in the field sharing ideas and things. Because on Zoom, you can't both make noise at the same time. It doesn't work that way. So a lot of me demonstrating and then repeating, which is not ideal, but yeah.
What about the kids? Tell us just briefly where the kids are in school, and then how, as parents, how did you all navigate this situation?
Yeah, so one of the side effects of Carrie having to do her work at the office was I got to fly that bird solo a lot of times here at the house. And Harper is going to be going into eighth grade, so she was finishing up seventh grade, and Liam's going to be going into third grade, so he was finishing second. For the most part, the first week was
horrible.
One of the worst weeks of my life, maybe, except when I had a couple of surgeries that one time, because we were all trying to figure it out all at the same time. I'm sure everyone at home right now is having some flashback nightmares of what it was like at the very beginning for everybody else. And
the teachers trying to figure it out.
Yeah, teachers trying to figure it out. And no kidding, God bless all of our teachers for the work that they have done all over the country in figuring out how to do this and how to handle all of the parents' outrage. I tried very hard to realize that, okay, I'm one person, but if I'm adding my voice to the other 20 parents in class, I'm sure this teacher is going to be completely overwhelmed. So tried to show a lot of grace as they figured things out. But yeah, the first week was hard. We were able to go to the school and get an extra Chromebook to bring home. So once we did that, things were a little smoother. Harper was pretty self-sufficient. All of her work would come at the beginning of the week, and then she would just she's a planner anyway, and she likes to know when she's going to do stuff and when it's going to get done. So I didn't really have to crack the whip on her very much to just make sure she was getting what she needed to done. And and she would ask for help every now and then, and I would give it to her or call one of my math major college students when it was about math, because I don't know what 2 + 5 is. I think it's 9 or something.
And it was not because of us.
She got an A, so that was great. All I know is how many students equal how many pizzas. I can do that math. I can make pizza. Liam was a little more difficult because he'd never really used a computer before, like probably so many his age, you know. And so learning how to navigate the computer and how all that worked. But he also was very good. His work would come online at 9 o'clock every morning, and he would be right there waiting. Is it on? Is it on? Is it on? And as soon as it was ready, he would get to work, and he would be done by 10:30 or so. So after the first week, which shall not, you know, we shall not speak of that anymore, it did pretty good. And for the most part, you know, tears of frustration were low on the kids' part, high on my part. but they were great, and you know, they were very excited when it was all finally over. Although it kind of class ended, and it was like, well, it pretty much looks like it did every other day, except now we don't have homework. But I was proud of them. They did a great job.
The biggest deal was just them missing their friends, and I'm sure everybody can relate, but knowing that their friends, this was their last time with them, in some ways it made it a lot easier to transition, because Harper and her best friend already started writing actual letters to each other, like pen pals, and both of Liam's best friends were also moving away. So one moved to Idaho and one moved to Wisconsin. And so they've had a lot of Zoom calls and stuff. But in some ways that's been easier because they've already gotten into a routine of distant communication. But in some ways it's been challenging and upsetting just because they missed their time. And for us too, that this is not the way we wanted to say goodbye to the people we have grown to love. And, you know, having a goodbye party after 11 years on a Zoom call is not ideal, but.
So one of the things that we all are kind of getting from all this is that there are some things in life we don't have control over, and trying to navigate those things. So not to suggest that we're all through the virus deal or any of that, but just from so far, what good thing do you think your family is taking from this, or that you want your family to take from going through it like this?
I might cry a little, but I have struggled for a long time with how much I have had to be away from home, just because I work all day and then I have like an hour to see everybody for dinner, and then I'm at rehearsal till 11 p.m. every night. And also a lot of weekends are taken up with rehearsal. So I've really been looking forward to this transition, but during this time being home and not everybody's stuff is canceled, so we all have to be here together. Because normally April would have been the busiest time of the entire year for
everybody,
both of us, for the kids. And Harper made one of her school assignments was a video about quarantine. And one of the things that she specifically, like her main point was just how she really enjoyed having everybody home. And it's also helped us to remember some of the basics and being creative. I mean, that's how both of us were brought up, as you know. But creativity, when you don't have any resources to deal with, to make things fun, and all the Lego challenges we've had as a family, and the board games we played, and the puzzles we've done, and things that, you know, we got to introduce our kids to some really good classic Disney movies that they need to know about, like The Rocketeer and Indiana Jones, which is not Disney, but you know what I mean? It's just kind of been a good reset for all of us, I think.
Yeah, I don't know that I would have too much to add. Just the extra time to be with the kids and to be together that we wouldn't normally have. Was probably the good that came out of it. You know, in thinking about it from a sort of spiritual perspective for me, it was the good has been sort of unexpected Sabbath. You know, I think Sabbath is so important for us to take, where, you know, the idea where we lay everything aside and we just depend upon God for our well-being. And life is so busy for so many of us so much of the time, we rarely stop and just quiet ourselves and be still and pay attention to that. And so this has been an unexpected Sabbath for us, in that all of the things that would have taken our time away from each other, away from working on our own walk, our own faith, were gone. And all that was left was to work on those things and to pay attention to that and to pay attention to each other. And so that's certainly probably been the biggest blessing. It's just the unexpected blessing of Sabbath, of just rest and being together. And so that's really been a positive.
And getting to do things like read a book together, a chapter a night.
Yeah.
That we'd never do that before. And Justin and I both, while we're hiding from the kids on the back porch, learning to re-enjoy and identify the different bird sounds we're hearing and things like that.
And for Carrie, it's specific birds. For me, that's bird one. That's Bob. That's Billy.
When you're thinking about those kind of things, of course, it's always hard for me to balance the rest need with the feeling that I should be doing something, especially with regard to our church life. So let me turn it around a little bit. What have you found during this period of time that the church there that you're part of, or here for that matter, has encouraged you with, or the church's presence in your life has helped you through this odd time we've been going through?
It's forced us to think about how to be a community in different ways. You know, like I mentioned earlier, so much we rely on what happens at the building. And in some ways, the building becomes the definition of what it means to be church. And I think this has been a blessing because it's shown us and shown me on a more personal level that the church is who we are and what we do, and sometimes mostly outside of that building. You know, the church is about being and doing and going, not residing in one spot. And the presence of the people here, the people I work with, and the folks that that we go to church with, just the way that they've reached out to be encouragements. We've had numerous occasions where someone would call and say, "Hey, check your front door. We left something for you." And we would go out, and there would just be a bag of goodies. You know, one lady called and said, "I left something," and we went out, and it was she had put together like a movie night care package for us and the kids with popcorn and candy and some, you know, non-sugar drinks and things like that. I think the creativity of the family of God I've seen on display more as we have to think of new ways, and not just have to, but I've seen the desire to, the want to. Yeah. That's been a huge blessing, is to see the way that people, not just because they have to, but because they're thinking about you, yeah, and make special effort to do something. And that's been a huge blessing to us personally, and the way that, you know, we've kind of also tried to do that for others. And so it's forced us to rethink what it means to be a family.
Yeah, it may keep forcing us in that way going forward. Yeah. So is there any passage of scripture that you can think of that's become more precious to the Hatfield family during this period of time? I mean, we all love the Lord's Word, all of it, but are there any parts of it that have been more your favorite during this time? It could be any story or any passage or just any principle.
Sure. I know mine. Do you do you want to go first?
Well, this has been one of my favorite scriptures for a long time. I kept it on my desk at work when days were tough. And it's taken on kind of a new meaning. So but it's the and I the actual passage itself is eluding me, like the placeholder. But I believe I will see the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living. Be strong and wait for the Lord has kind of been the thing going through my head, especially when it feels like we can't do another day like this. It's made me much more thankful for seeing the good things that are here, like birds and trees and sunshine. So where is that?
Psalm 27.
Thank you.
Yeah. there are two for me. The first one is one that you had actually written about early on in one of your daily devotionals, Psalm 25. Psalm 25 became pretty dear to my heart. I read it just about every morning. And early on, when I was doing my live stream on Wednesday night, I was doing, verses to bring encouragement or comfort. And Psalm 25 was one of the first ones that I did after you had written about it, and just really touched me. The other one is, the last sermon I preached at Hillcrest, I did over this passage. Nathan had already asked me to speak, and I had already agreed to long back before any of this happened. And, now that he was going to be in town, he said, well, do you want to go ahead and speak? I said, sure. What do you, he was doing a series in Matthew, and he kind of told me where he would be. And I spent most of the week leading up to it looking at this passage that he had asked about, but I couldn't stop thinking about this passage in Romans. And finally, I got to near the end of the week, and I was like, hey, is it okay if I do something else? And, I was like, this passage won't let go of me, and I need to talk about it. And he was like, yeah, that's great. But it's the one on, it is by this hope that we are saved, and we hope for what we do not see, and we wait for it with patience, and the Spirit is helping us in our weakness. We don't know how to pray as we ought, but the Spirit himself intercedes. And that's the first part. And for me, it was just, as so many probably experienced a form of grief, not knowing exactly where that grief came from, and it was the loss of our normalcy, the loss of our regular lives, and I just couldn't put it into words, and so this passage really latched on to me as, it's okay, I don't need to, God knows. And then 34 through the rest of 8 there really was the bright spot of comfort, that idea that there's nothing, none of this that's here, none of it that's going to come, nothing that we haven't even imagined yet, none of it is going to be able to separate us from the love of God, as Jesus is right there at his right hand interceding for us. And that just was so comforting to me during this time that regardless of how difficult things got or how, down we might be from one thing or another, or and who knew about what was about to hit our country? All of these things is, they're horrible and they're difficult and we struggle with those things, but the comfort of knowing that none of it can remove us from the love that God has for us was just a really powerful passage over the last.
That sounds like one you may need to do for us, Justin.
I would love to, yeah, absolutely.
We'd love that too. You guys have also been working on transitioning to another work situation and moving to a different community. So in trying to do that at a time when routine things are interrupted to some degree, how has that changed what you guys have had to do? What has, you've moved before, but what surprised you about it this time?
I think having one foot in two worlds. We've moved a lot, even in the last 11 years, but kept the same jobs. Previously, when we had left one work for another, it was a pretty cut and dry sort of thing. But I think the nature of this move, in one sense, how personal it is for us, because we already know and love so many of you guys there. You know, we've been in one way affiliated with North National / now Watermill for 18 years for me, you know, since we
a lot longer.
Yeah. a lot longer for her whole life.
into that, yeah.
Yeah, but it's been, you know, so already having so much support coming towards us from Springfield has been really encouraging, being in contact already with future coworkers, as well as I've been texting with, you know, the youth group students, and so it's kind of felt like I've started everything I've been doing here in terms of class and reaching out to people. I've also started trying to do for you guys in terms of making classes available and starting to reach out and text with the youth group students and things like that. And so that's definitely been unique, because it's felt like there's much more of a blurred line between, you know, this thing and this thing. And it's just all kind of, and because of the time that we're dealing with, it's made it a lot easier. I'm already filming classes for folks here at Hillcrest. Why not make those available to anybody who they might be helpful to? So that's been great. The personal connection's been really great, because so many people have already been reaching out to us and checking on us and seeing how we're doing. You know, it's not we're moving somewhere and we don't know anybody, and you know, we've already got some good relationships that have been trying to take care of us and so on. So there's that, which is all great, and there's also a sense of, you know, there's a very deep sadness for the 11 years that we've had here and the relationships that we've built, the friendships that we've had, and the saying goodbye, but also a high degree of excitement for what we know is waiting for us. So it's kind of like jumping out of hot and cold water constantly of, oh, I'm really sad, but hey, this is really exciting at the same time. So it's been very different from other moves that we've made in the past.
I think the biggest things that have been interrupted by all of this have been the job searches to replace both of us got stopped in their tracks. And so that caused a lot of anxiety from both Hillcrest and ACU, my department, that we have tried to separate ourselves from, but bleeds into our lives quite a bit, just because they still don't know when or if they'll be able to hire somebody. And then just simple things, things that should be a lot more straightforward, like enrolling the kids in new schools because all the offices are closed, or getting Liam's birth certificate because the courthouse has been closed. things like that are kind of nuts, but
yeah.
Good news is we got it done.
Yeah, we can. Isn't it interesting to kind of stand here and look back and see ways in which you don't know for sure, but you could see where the providence of God could have taken care of us and helped us through times. I try to remind myself of that a lot. I know that you can't have worked at something that you cared about and lived among people you cared about for that long and then all of a sudden not care about them anymore. So I know that that's one part of the emotion of this is moving, but taking all the people and all the tasks with you in your heart. Mm-hmm. So our prayers and thoughts are with you. We're thankful to you for what you've done to help us, especially our young people and some of our families through that time. I wonder if you ever got the time of day issues worked out with Anna about the versus the day.
Yeah, she sends them around noon now. So Anna, if you're watching, thank you.
All of us here want to let you know that we look forward to your helping us in our work, and we pray for the hearts of the people that you're leaving there as well.
Thank you.
I need to move into the third part of this for a second now, and just the part where you are, nobody else identifies with this totally, but you're coming here to help us with the staff situation where we need your help. And it's in a way, it's interesting that second or third week in March, our eldership had you and I sit down with them. That was the first time I was with you guys all in the meeting. But then they came up with four things that they were going to ask you to focus on, and I'll leave it to them to focus on. I'll leave it to them to kind of be communicating those to the church here more. But there are ways in which we need your help. But it was interesting that like March the 12th or something, we sat down together and had that discussion and wrote it down on paper and all of that. And then March 13th, we were here having to decide what to do that Sunday. And then we just had worship, our service together that day. And then that was the last time we've gotten to meet in person. So the circumstances, once again, keep changing. But one of the things that has happened is it's become pretty clear that brotherhood-wise, I hear talk by academic people or teachers who train folks for ministry, that ministry roles are likely to be less narrowly defined going forward, that the church is going to need us to be able to do more things. Do you see it that way in coming here, Justin, as well?
Yeah, I think so. I'm seeing that here at Hillcrest, and we have, you know, six ministers on staff, but the needs are so many that the lines have become blurred as to who's responsible to do what and what needs to be done, and everybody just needs to kind of pitch in. And I think, you know, coming there to Springfield, it's going to be a lot that way as well, especially, you know, we don't know how long this is going to go on, that we'll need to do things the way we're doing, but it's forcing, asking of us to think about how we do things in much broader terms. And so where we might more narrowly define, well, this is my lane I'm sticking to, you know, I think it's calling on us to be more attentive to a lot of other needs that the church is going to, and some needs that we don't even know are there yet.
Right. Some of the ones that we do are ones that I know our eldership asked you to think about helping us with from the start. For example, especially what you've already been doing and kind of beginning to form relationships with our young people and their families, and that part of it you've done, and you bring some special ability here with us. And what you were mentioning a while ago about helping us to, you know, we were like in the second study of an effort to add more elders and deacons and so forth, and we got interrupted. Maybe that's so you can be here and help us as we still need to attend to those things. But those are it's interesting how you can identify situations in the congregation which are sort of fit your gifts and your interests and your abilities. I hope you find that with us here. I think I can see that already. So what kinds of things about the Watermill congregation and our situation in Springfield have you guys looked forward to? What made this situation of interest to you especially?
I think, you know, we've been familiar with Watermill for quite a while, and we've always been impressed with the family feel, the family nature of the people there, how much they love one another and love being together. That's the kind of place that we want to be. There seems to have always been a strong desire on the part of the folks there at Watermill to serve and to be involved and to be active in sharing their faith, those sorts of things. And we've spent the last, 10 years, I've spent the last 10 years at Hillcrest helping to equip people and to encourage people and to give them the kinds of things that they need to do the work that they want to do. And so I think that's certainly something that we can offer. It's way easier to help equip and train and support and give people what they need to do the work than it is to create that feeling in them.
Carrie, have Liam and Harper made any connections already with friends so far that are not cousins?
Harper has, and we really have appreciated the intentional effort that people have made to reach out to her already and get to know her. And so she's already found, she's pretty shy when it comes to meeting new people because she likes to have a plan. She likes to know what's going to happen. So uncertain situations are not her favorite. And so the fact that she's had time to get her mind around this and be in the youth group a bit and make some friends has really helped with that. Liam is pretty tentative right now. He does have his cousin, and he's been in Bible class, so he knows them. But I think it'll take him a little bit of time too. So if he doesn't speak to you right away, don't take that to heart. That's just his. He takes after me, so.
Real serious question. What time is the truck going to be unloaded?
Megan Jobes reached out to me just before we actually got on here and asked if, I'm assuming she was volunteering Tucker because when I told her what time, she said, well, he'll be there. but she asked me, I was like, well, like someone else in our family, I don't like to let the moss grow under my feet. So I'm probably going to start unloading at 7:30 in the morning on Saturday.
We so look forward to your help, and we hope we can. I've been walking around the parking lot during this period of time, and I try to take two circles, praying for the church and for you guys. And so we hope we can be a blessing to you. One of the things, Justin, that I can't finish our class for tonight without mentioning is we talked about circumstances. Man, the circumstances, I mean, here in this congregation right now, we have people we love who are getting ready to get married and celebrating graduations and all of that. We also have people we love who are dealing with griefs. And in our country, we have not only the disruption of the violence of the virus, but now of violence and the injustice that kind of leads to injustice, it seems. So I wonder if you think of who the church needs to be in this situation. What needs to be our stance in this mix right now? Do you have a passage of scripture you could kind of close the class tonight for us just by sharing with us something that kind of fits what we need to do now?
Yeah, two come to mind. One, just briefly mention, the parable of the 99 and the one lost and Jesus chasing after the one lost. It's not that the 99 weren't important, it's just that the one was very much in danger. And so there was a seeking after the one and a special attention paid to the one that was most in danger. I think that's something maybe we ought to keep in mind right now. The 99 are very important, but there are a few considered in the one that are very in danger of being overlooked, of being shoved to the side and shoved down. And so, there is a certain, I think, responsibility for us to make sure we are seeking after those that might be in that one category, while recognizing the 99 are very much important. You know, so I guess the idea of paying attention to those who are being marginalized, and so I think the evidence of Scripture throughout is a care and concern for those who find themselves on the outside, on the outskirts, being put down. So that would be one. And I think part of that comes from having a certain kind of mindset. And so we talked about this a little bit earlier today, but my favorite letter in the New Testament is probably Philippians, as Paul deals with a church that needs to learn how to love just a little bit better. And he kind of sets off the majority of his argument here in Philippians with this idea of our citizenship and how our walk, how the manner that we carry ourselves should match the kind of citizen God asks us to be in his community and in his kingdom. And so in chapter 1, starting verse 27, where he really starts this theme, as he talks about, only let your citizenship be worthy of the gospel of Christ. And then he says, so whether I come and see you or am absent, I will hear that you're standing firm in one spirit, with one mind, striving side by side for the faith of the gospel, not frightened in anything by opponents, for it has been granted to you for the sake of Christ, not only to believe in him, but to suffer for his sake. So an encouragement of how to act, but a promise that we might suffer because of the choices we make for the sake of loving, engaged in the same conflict that you saw I've had and still have. And then I love the next passage here in chapter 2, and I won't read all of it because we know it real well, but it's this idea of having the same mind, looking to the interests of others before ourselves, having the same mind that Christ did, even though he was in the form of God, didn't consider equality with God something that they had, but instead he humbled himself and emptied himself. And the result of his humbling and emptying himself for the sake of somebody else was that, you know, he was exalted and we were brought back into relationship with God. Well, we could talk the rest of the night on Philippians and what it has to say, but I think Paul's answer seems to be throughout Philippians in terms of human relationships. It's following the example of Christ and loving others more than we love ourselves. And that stretches in so many different directions, not only in terms of the kind of violence and racism that we're seeing, but also in terms of, you know, just what the coronavirus is doing to all of us and how we think about everything and the kind of grace that it asks for us to show one another and the kind of love that it asks for us to show each other. And it's so unlike us as humans to, and I think that's why Paul hammers it so hard, to think about someone else and their situation and their needs before I think about my own. And it's great if we can both do that. You know, like if Carrie's thinking about my needs and I'm thinking about hers, we have a great marriage. If I'm thinking about my needs and she's thinking about her needs, we don't have a great marriage. If I'm thinking about my needs and she's thinking about my needs, she's super unhappy. It only works when we are both wholeheartedly concerned with the other person's well-being. Yeah. And I think that right now we need a lot more of that in the world and in our church as we deal with all of the issues that are going on. If we can start in a place where I am more concerned about the well-being of the other person, I think we'll go a long way towards being able to be in a more peaceful existence.
Even on social media.
Especially.
Yeah, very good point and very good illustration of it. And I appreciate it very, very much. Thank you all for taking time out from your boxes to help us in the first session of our summer series for this summer. And we hope safe travel for you all, and we look forward to our fellowship and working together in the Lord's service. Thank you all very much.
Thanks for having us.